Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or just exploring your options, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you can trust to navigate the real estate market with ease. Visit jocelynbradley.com to learn more. And let's get started at the Ask for Football Army Football Show.
All right. Hello and welcome, Army fans, back after a tough loss at home. I will be your host today, James at Brigade Review. I got Dano E. Capeza here with me. It is a skinny show tonight, not only because it's the two skinniest guys in the program hosting, but because it's only two of us. I don't know if that's actually true, but I'm gonna claim it. Dan, how you doing?
Good, man. You know, obviously not the outcome we wanted, but I had a pretty awesome 30th reunion weekend up at West Point. I can't complain about that. It sort of gets into how I feel about the game, so I'll sort of save that. But, you know, long week. I personally have a lot to do professionally between now and Thanksgiving, and yet here we are talking about Army football.
You know, I always find that there's a lot to do when you're moving, and if you need a realtor, you can go to our title sponsor, Josh Bradley. Dan, you want to take us through that?
Sure. Friends, we have a sponsor on this show, and her name is Jocelyn Bradley. She is a member of the Long Gray line. I believe she's class of 2005. I should know that, but I don't, and it's not in the outline. But if you are PCSing to the Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty, Fort Bragg area, have we got the realtor for you? Jocelyn is class of 2010. He did put it in the outline. How do you?
Yeah, all you got to say is she looks like she's class of 2025.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, she served as an Army logistics officer where she honed her passion for impacting lives. Now, as a dedicated realtor, she brings that same commitment to help you find your dream home or one assumes sell your existing home as well. She provides exceptional personalized service to ensure a seamless home buying experience tailored to your needs. And beyond Fort Bragg, Jocelyn's extensive network of trusted, experienced realtors spans the country and is ready to support you no matter where your PCS or just whatever kind of move you're doing takes you. If you're relocating locally across the nation, whatever, you know, listen, buying a house is a frustrating, challenging, very expensive proposition. You'd like to work with somebody who is going to have your best interest at heart and not try to just upsell you or whatever. And that's what we're doing here is we're recommending you West Pointers that you can trust. And that's Jocelyn. And even if you're not moving to Fort Bragg, let Jocelyn at least give you a hand trying to find somebody in your area that you can trust. And like we said, you know, she's a proud supporter here at Ask for Football, and she's helping us stay in business. So help her or let her guide you into your new home today or sell your home if you're moving. And that's it.
Thank you, Jocelyn. All right. Okay. We're going to get into the Tulsa game. We're not going to rehash it quarter by quarter like we usually do. Everyone knows what happens. Army was up for three quarters and lost it in the fourth. We're going to get into it. I think we're going to start this by framing a discussion here. And I'm going to ask a question to Dan, and I think Dan and I are going to have slightly different answers, and we'll talk it out and see where we fall. But hopefully the discussion leads us in a productive manner, which I know with Dan and I it will, rather than devolving into madness as the Army faithful have kind of done in the last couple of days. And then we'll have a talk about that. So I'm going to start with this question, Dan. A lot of people seem to be blaming play calling in this game. I typically find myself defending play calling as people are blaming it and then blaming play calling when nobody's talking about it, which is a weird spot to be. I find
You're
myself
just contrarian.
I guess so. I guess you'll have to ask my wife. Although I married a contrarian as well, so that's a great recipe for a long and happy marriage. I don't have a problem. I might be able to nitpick a play call here or there, but by and large, like, I'm not in that locker room. I don't know what they're prepped for. I don't know X, Y, and Z. I didn't see an issue, a big enough issue with any of the play calling to where I thought number one, the play calling made a difference in the game. And number two, like that I would feel justified going after play calling in the slightest.
So
I understand that might be an extreme wording, yeah, but I'm using that to start a discussion. So we'll go from there.
So I guess the thing that's frustrating is we went from getting something like 7 yards per carry in the first half to just getting absolutely stonewalled in the second half. And it felt like part of the reason that they got as much success in the first half as they did is because, you know, the first play from scrimmage was a downfield 44-yard pass that set up a touchdown run on the next play. And in the first half, Tulsa really had no answer for the quarterback follow plays, especially the quarterback follow. And then after that first drive in the third quarter, Army just stopped. And it felt to me like they were trying to run their 4-minute offense. And I do remember, like, they threw that quick out to Noah Short, which is basically like a long pitch, right? Trying to get it to the edge, just short on the edge. That went nowhere. I didn't even understand why they threw it, because there were definitely defenders out there. It didn't seem like there was much in the way of blockers. You know, the outside running game hasn't been there in a while, and we definitely didn't see it this week. I'm not sure what I would have done differently, but when they got to at least 1 3rd and 8 and they threw like a quick 10-yard out and hit it, no problem. And then they never went back to that. And they certainly, you know, they threw one pass to the tight end for the 2-point conversion. It went off without a hitch. They never went back to that. Like, there's stuff that we know was in the game plan this week that they ran once that they had success with that later they didn't come back to. And I think maybe that's the issue. By the time they started trying to throw downfield again, it was late in the fourth quarter and we were in desperation mode and you knew how it was going to go. Is, I think, the biggest issue with the play calling. It's like we needed to be, maybe you try that 4-minute offense thing once, but when it wasn't there, they needed to come out and try something else. That was what I think I saw.
So, I think I'll push back. I think I agree with a lot of that. I think I'll push back on a couple of things. It was clear that Tulsa had adjusted at the half.
Absolutely.
We came out first drive of the second half, and if not for a penalty, that drive ends in 0 points. They did try throwing downfield on that drive. There is a missed DPI, which, you know, the announcers pointed out.
Okay, so I'm in the stands. I don't see the missed DPI. Although, was that the one in the end zone?
I don't know if it was in the end zone or what. It might have been, but they were kind of hand fighting. But then the defender forced the receiver to the ground in the hand fighting as the ball is coming down. It was a downfield pass.
Okay.
So and the color, you know, the analyst said it should have been DPI. Now you can disagree with them, but. But at least
you're not going to get 100% of those calls.
Sure. I mean, sure. You're not. But I guess whether or not the call is right, they were trying to throw downfield and Tulsa was defending it well, at least well enough. They end up kicking the field goal, right? Because,
right.
And by the way, they end up kicking a field goal because of their creativity, right? They were too creative and they tried to throw downfield and it stopped their drive. And then you're right. At that point, they don't try to throw downfield again until a little bit later.
Yeah.
But it's not as if they're not trying to do creative things. They're trying to throw to the flat. They tried a couple of reverses. Like the creativity was gone. It was not gone. I think the issue that I have is that the immediate thing that everyone goes to is, why did they throw the ball from their own 10-yard line and throw an interception or whatever it was? That was a bad play call.
And okay, then, we're going to talk about that one.
Yes, we are. There's a few things, yeah. Why did they run a perimeter play that ended up out of bounds in the last series, and why did they go for it on fourth down? The problem is and we're going to go through it. I think all of those decisions, all of those play call decisions were actually good play call decisions. There were execution errors from the players.
Going forward on 4th and 3 when you're getting stonewalled is, I think, a discussion, the decision that's worthy of discussion.
Sure, but that's not even an offensive play call decision. That is a head coach, is it worth it or not?
No, it's then, analytics. We know how
they make it. And we'll talk about it. But by the way, if he doesn't trip over the ass of that DB, he could score if he wanted to on that play. It was a phenomenal play call. Like, the blocking was good. Helms got bumped by the ass of the DB, and that was the end of the game, effectively, right? It was a great play call, and there was an unfortunate execution error. That was it.
I mean, listen, that's football, right? That's why it's a competition. That's right? The physical part of competition. Right.
Hindsight's 20/20, and we'll get into each of these three play call decisions. The problem is when you present a logical argument to people that are irrational because they're upset about a loss.
Oh, sure.
The response to that is, oh, well, it's offensive play call creativity in the second half. Like, but it wasn't, though. Like, they got stopped being creative on three different drives.
So I will defend what I wrote in the quick thoughts by just, you know, so we're up in the stands and I'm surrounded by all my friends. And I don't know if you've met those guys, but like it's the crew that I've been hanging out with pretty steady, you know, since I was 19, and we're still friends and we still hang out. So, and then we walk down and I link up with Terry, and of course, Terry's son is a tight end. So every pass that doesn't go to a tight end makes his ears catch on fire because, you know, it's Terry, right? And so he was like highly frustrated with the play calling. And if he was on here, I'm sure he could list five things that were going on. And, you know, and I'm just like there with a drink in my hand, you know, we're like sampling this bespoke brandy that they had put on a ship and tumbled for a year. And I'm listening to like this rant. So that sort of infused my thought process. There was a lot of like pretty vanilla, you know, try to hand off to the fullback, try quarterback power that just seemingly didn't go anywhere. That so I feel like we see all the time. But how do you complain? Because we saw that work in the first half a lot.
Well, so. And it even worked on the first drive of the second half. I mean, yes. There were two first downs they picked up with QB power and fullback power, and the drive only ends because they throw downfield and it's incomplete, right? So it's kind of hard to say, oh, well, then why on the next drive did you not go downfield? Well, I mean, our last drive ended up with 3 points instead of seven because we did throw downfield.
Yeah. I understand that. And in the moment I thought that too, like, why are you, you know, anyway, so here's a question, from at former tanker. Did the K-State game reinforce a bad habit?
No, of quarterback power? No, the QB power after QB power and after QB power was reinforced by getting 12 wins last year.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, well, the recipe game, works with the right personnel and a senior team.
And with this game, Tulsa's defense, especially in the first half, but they were very much keyed on that fullback dive and not so much on the quarterback. And, you know, as a result, Cale Helms ran for like 7.5 yards per carry in the first half. That happened. Like, it's hard to argue with going away from it.
I mean, the thing is, this is a recipe that has been proven to work in a post cut blocking, you know, most recent cut blocking rules change era. And is it going to work when you're a team that's lost all of its primary skill position players with the exception of Noah Short and 60% of its offensive line? No, but no offense is, right? So I still trust the system. I still trust the scheme that they're trying to run with these QB with this zone power. But Tulsa made a great adjustment on defense. And you have to give them some credit and not just blame your own guys every time something goes wrong. Let's get into those three specific play calls. Now, okay, I'm going to start by saying, like, I think a lot of people, especially in college and even in college now, people are starting to do it because players get paid, but maybe specifically at Army, they hesitate to blame players because they're 20-year-olds who don't get paid and they're not, you know, coaches getting paid.
That's an editorial decision that we've made on this show too.
Well, I think fans think that too. I think that, and that's fair, but there's a difference between not, you know, like treating players with kid gloves and calling them out. Right. And these players know, like, they're not idiots. They're smart guys. They're about to graduate from a service academy. Like, yeah, we're not telling them anything, you know, anything they haven't already heard from their coaches.
Yeah, they're about to watch the plot. Tex was down there at the tailgate, and he was like, oh, they're just going to rip me apart when we go into the film room. And we're like, okay, you know, that's great. I understand that that's how it works. But nevertheless, you know, congratulations on your first catch.
Yeah. So three plays, right? Well, the first is the interception. You can't complain about offensive play call, you know, lack of offensive play call diversity, and then get mad when they throw the ball downfield and be upset at the play call when there are several open receivers downfield and your quarterback decides to throw it into double coverage.
Okay, like, good. Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
Okay. That play happened 50 feet in front of me.
Yeah.
So Helms rolled out to his left. And the guy who was open, I'm not sure who all was open, but he's got the number one receiver, Brady Anderson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's who he tried to throw to, who was double covered. And the reason that he was double covered is because he was single covered. And then the safety, seeing the quarterback run to the left, also cheated to the left. So that leaves Parker Pulaski open on the right. So you're asking my man to roll out to his left, stop, pivot, throw back across his body and across the field.
No, but I'm asking him not to throw into double coverage. Throw it away.
It was like third and eight.
Fine,
then punt. So okay.
Or try to get as many yards as you can on the ground and keep the clock running. But don't throw it.
So he was going nowhere. There was definitely a dude in front of him.
That's fine.
If he tries to tuck it, he just eats it. Throw it away was definitely an option.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and that was one that Terry pointed out. Pulaski was open, but dude, he had to throw back across his body across the field. Like,
yeah, no,
but that's not easy to do.
He should have done that. All I'm saying is it's not a play call issue. It's a on the field decision issue. You don't throw in a double coverage in that situation. You throw it away. Okay. That's the interception. Number two, Noah Short going out of bounds.
Okay.
To the extent that it's a coach's fault, for playing, you know, running an exterior run play on, you know, in a situation where you need the clock to churn a perimeter.
Well, the problem. Okay. So they really need, I would argue that they needed the first down most of all the things you really needed. You needed the first down.
Yeah, of course. But so, if he doesn't go out of bounds, you're at the same spot on the field.
Yes.
And instead of a minute and 50 seconds left, there's a minute and 10 seconds left.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
now punting makes sense on fourth and three.
Yes. Right?
Because if you punt on fourth and three, they get the ball with 70 seconds to go, let's say 40 yards plus 20, 60 yards. That's a lot harder to do than going at that point, you know, going for it and missing.
20,
they got to go
30
yards in a minute and 50 seconds. They're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
So
especially the whole issue with giving the ball back, period, is they'd been running for 7 yards per carry. Your defense hadn't stopped them at all. So there's a whole argument. In fact, I don't know if you watched the Giants game, but the Giants did this same thing and lost. They had the ball on they had fourth and six going in. And instead of kicking the field goal to go up by six, they tried to score on fourth and six, score a touchdown. And they did it because their defense hadn't stopped anybody all day. And that was, I'm sure, what informed this decision as well. It's like, our defense has not stopped anybody. We have to make a play on offense or we're going to lose.
Sure. I guess my point is, again, going back to the play calling side of things, if you can't trust the one returning skill guy from last year to stay in bounds on a perimeter run play when he has to stay in bounds, it doesn't matter what your play call is.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree. Yeah. At the point that the journey is over, he needed to go down in bounds.
Correct.
That's not a coaching issue.
Right.
You know,
maybe it's a coaching issue in the prep for the game, but it's not a play calling issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brian McDonald says perfect comparison, Dan. So thank you.
There you go. Number three, and we're going to talk about the Giants in a little bit when I rant later. don't you guys worry. Number three, going for it on fourth down. You absolutely have to go for it on fourth down, like we just talked about, right? If you make it, the game's over.
Which fourth down is this? Oh, on fourth and three at the first half?
Yeah. No. At the end of the game.
At the end of the game.
Yeah. You absolutely have to go.
Instead of punting.
If you punt, you give them a minute and 53 seconds to go 60 yards, which they've been doing the last three drives.
Yeah. No, well, that's the same. That's the exact same argument.
Right.
I didn't love it. Like, I personally, I don't know what the analytics say, but
I didn't feel good about it, but it made sense.
Yeah. Like, the one that I didn't love was going for it on fourth and three when they could have kicked a field goal in the first half and they came away with nothing.
Okay.
Because at that point, I just didn't feel like they'd been running the ball reliably enough to, I mean, fourth and three is pretty challenging if you're Army. If they were going to do it like that, they should have thrown a quick out.
I mean, it's a
especially because they've been good at throwing those quick outs.
I wonder what their analytics say there, because I'm sure it's tailored to the individual kicker. That's a 44 yarder.
Sure it is. I'm sure it is.
So I wonder what they say about that. But I mean, obviously we're never gonna look into that book. But I guess my whole point is, like, look, if you're the type of person that is screaming about how the coaches are screwing this away and so on and so forth because you don't feel like you can say that about a player, you're just screaming into the void, right? Like, there's a respectful way to say, no, there were execution errors on the field, right?
Well, and so, and, yeah.
And you can, and by the way, that actually means something when you're not always screaming about how the coaches are screwing something away, right? Like,
I finally had a chance to text Cons today. Cons, I don't know if you're listening to this, but if you are, you've been a subject of discussion in the Firstie Club. and Cons caught fire from everybody, right? And he's like the avatar of Army football online. And you can yell at him because he's not a player, he's not a coach, he's just sort of making himself a screening panel. For those former tankers, you know what a screening panel is, right? So a screening panel is what you shoot at when you're trying to bore sight your tank. So it's just there to take rounds. And that's Cons on social media. But I was like, dude, are you okay? Because it's like been tough couple of days. And he said that he'd been getting DMs from Navy fans and just from everybody. And I was like, I'd honestly rather just look into my toilet and stare at my own poop, because let me get more out of it. Come on.
Oh. All right. Speaking of this, I have a rant. I'm going to let Dan talk first, and then I'm going to go on my rant, and then we're going to flush the Tulsa game.
Yeah.
And we are going to, well, actually, let's do play of the game first,
because okay,
we can flush the tapes and move on.
Well, we talked about the interception already, so I just wanted to talk about how difficult it is to roll out to your left and then sort of turn around and hit a guy, open guy, but across the field to your right. I mean, pretending that that's a thing that Kelly Holmes was going to do and make work.
Yeah, know, that's
65%
fair.
65% of the time is not right.
I think my play of the game is the mind games on going for two. So you get the penalty.
Yeah.
You could have taken it on the kickoff. Instead, they take it on the extra point because they say, okay, I'll be at the 1.5 instead of the 3. So if you're Tulsa, you're like, oh, they're going for it because they think they can get a yard and a half on us.
Sure.
So we're going to stack the box.
Yep.
And then they throw the ball on a play where they could have scored from the 8-yard line.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just hilarious and a little bit of genius.
But then they never come back to it. Like, it was okay, the kid is a family friend. I've been skiing with him. Like, but dude, he's the best pass catching tight end they have ever had.
But that's a play. That's a play that you're running because there's no deep safety, because you're up in the end zone. That's not a play that you run with a safety that's 12 yards back.
You can still run a tight end seam route. Come on.
Sure, but
maybe it won't be there.
Not to that. Not when you've run it before that game and the safety is wise to it. I don't know. I'm not going to get on that.
On fourth and three, you could have run that same tight end seam route.
They had a great, as we said, they had a great play call on fourth and three. Our guy.
Oh, that wasn't the one. I'm sorry. On that rollout that became an interception, they could have just set that thing up differently. So if you want to argue about the play call, actually, and listen, we've been roll Cale Helms out of the pocket. He's good at throwing that. It's true, he is. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Dan, you want to go first, or are you, or was your talk about Cons?
I'm done. Yeah,
done.
No, I'm done.
Okay. All right. A lot of Army fans have seemingly lost their absolute ever-loving mind over this loss. And so I'm going to be pretty blunt. I want to point out that this is aimed at no one in particular. To be honest, I had a bunch of interactions with fans, with Firstie Club members, fans on Twitter, the whole nine. I remember no specifics. I'm not like, I don't remember which account I was interacting with, and I'm happy about that. I don't care. I don't want to have like a further, discussion about it, but I'm not pointing out any individual here. I'm just taking the collection of Army fandom that I interacted with over the last few days, and I'm commenting on it. So think of this as a PSA, not an accusation. Look, if you want to be upset after a loss, like, congrats, you're a normal human being. You're allowed to be upset. You are allowed to be pissed off. You are allowed to be heartbroken. Like, that's part of sports. But you sort of have three options once this happens. Number one, you accept it, that as a part of sports, sometimes you lose. And without that, winning is no fun. Mm. Like,
there you go.
If you can't accept the loss, then you're not going to have fun in the wins. Number two, you can just scream into oblivion at coaches because you just want to irrationally hate someone, and that's the easy guy who's making a lot of money. If that's your case, I think you're getting way too much of your dopamine from watching Army football, in which case you have life priorities you need to figure out. Go spend more time with your family or start a family or something like that, because if you can't handle the fallout from not getting your weekly dopamine hit because Army lost, I can't help you, dude.
I know a lot of people who have quit watching football because they struggle with the losses.
You know what? Cool. Like, they're probably happier people. Like,
they probably are. And I'm not really saying you should stop watching Army football, but
sure, but
keep it at an emotional.
But figure out how to keep yourself in check. Right.
Yeah.
And then number three is you retreat into not caring anymore. Right.
Which is also correct.
Right. Now, I'm not naive. Like, I understand that people are going to follow teams more when they're good and less when they're bad. And now we'll bring in the Giants. I am a New York football Giants fan. I grew up in New Jersey. Near enough the Meadowlands, I'm a New York football Giants fan. I have not given the slightest shit about the New York football Giants for the last 10 years because it's painful to watch. It's the New York Giants, right? It's not Army football. It's very different. And by the way, if the New York Giants start looking good next year, yeah, I'll start watching it, but I'm not going to enjoy that nearly as much as the season ticket holders that have gone to every home game for the last 10 years who have suffered through it. They're really going to enjoy it. I'm not. So I recognize that, but I can only be a fan of so many teams. That's not college football. College football, you are a fan of your college football team because you went there, because your dad went there, because your mom went there. You are a fan of college football teams because you grew up in an Irish Catholic household in the Northeast and there was no good football team, so Mass was on Sundays and Irish football was on Saturdays. You were a fan of Pitt because your dad worked, it was a steel worker. You're a fan of West Virginia because your dad worked in a coal mine. This is college football. This is not the pros. You are a fan of these teams because it is meaningful to you to be a fan of these teams. And now I get that's kind of changing because there's too much money in college sports. But that's not the case at Army. At Army, people root for Army because it's meaningful to them. This is the case across all service academies. My grandfather was a World War II paratrooper. My uncle flew carrier ops in Vietnam. Like, that's why this matters. That's what makes this different than Michigan, Ohio State. It's what makes it different than Alabama and Auburn. It matters because you love the institution. I love Army football because I love Army. I love what they do, and I want them to do it well, and that's why I support the team, all right? And if they lose, it's disappointing and heartbreaking. But if that makes me love Army less, then I really didn't love Army that much to begin with. So support your damn team. Like, this is not the New York Giants where it's a pro organization just trying to suck money out of you. It's your damn team. Love your damn team.
So, like I said, I was at the reunion. I was surrounded by all of my favorite people. And I actually commented to several people that it's easier to take the losses in person because I'm still there with my friends. And I'm not sort of sitting there on my couch stewing in my own juices. I'm surrounded by people that I like. You know, we have the physical exertion of walking up the hill to the lots, open up a couple of beers, and I have a few hours in the camaraderie of West Pointers, which is why, I mean, that is why I'm a season ticket holder, right?
Well, and not just that, it's constantly reminding you that this is why I love Army.
Yeah, right. Right. And so this was the thing, right? I'm surrounded by all these people and yeah, it sucks. Like, this team, there's a lot of negative ramifications associated with this loss, and that's unfortunate. And it does suck. But at the same time, like, it was easier because I was with the people that I love, and I definitely didn't go on social media and imbibe any of that stuff, and I'm not about to start. So I mean, I'm a little concerned because this UTSA game, you know, not to bury the lead, but it's going to be a tough one, and I have to be at home by myself, albeit surrounded with my family, and so I got to sort of figure that out, I think. But anyway,
all right. Said. I think I have a sounder for us, Dan. Tulsa game is flushed behind us. Let's talk about things we enjoy. Dan, can you tell us about Craig Oxane?
Yes, friends, this show is sponsored by Craig Oxane. He is an area sales manager for the Money Store. Craig is a mortgage broker. Friends, Craig is a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. He is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. And this is important because buying a house, as we already said, is a confusing and honestly scary proposition. And when you're doing it, you would like to deal with somebody that you feel like you can trust, you can call on the phone and like have a conversation with, not a call center, random big box bank, mindless website, whatever. And of course, as we've said, this is how the West Point network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at Astro Football. We're trying to help you get the best deal on a mortgage that we possibly can by introducing you to the very man you need to meet when you're trying to buy a house. Right. And but here's the kicker. Craig does not charge lending fees for veterans. That's a huge savings. That's like $1,300. So save yourself $1,300, friends. I mean, I don't want to say it's too easy, but it's too easy. So that's it. Craig Oxane, area sales manager for the Money Store, mortgage broker extraordinaire. Check him out. His link and Jocelyn's both are on our website. They both got these little business cards. You click on there and, you know, fill out a little questionnaire. You'll be talking to Craig or Jocelyn in a couple of hours. You know, get it done. And do you know that they just did their first sale together? Referred to us, referred really? To by us. Yep. Right, so life is good.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bowl scenarios. And then we will get into the UTSA preview. So there are officially 80 bowl slots available for all of college football. If ESPN decides to replace the Bahamas Bowl, then that jumps to 82. My hunch is that whether or not they replace the Bahamas Bowl will depend on how many bowl eligible teams there are. If they need another bowl to fit the bowl eligible teams, they'll make another, you know, Frisco Football Classic or whatever and stick it there. Although I think the Frisco Bowl this year is in the Cowboys practice facility because the soccer stadium is under renovation. So maybe it's not in Frisco, but I digress. There are currently 72 teams with 6 wins. Nobody's playing more than one FCS team this year. The only 3 FBS teams that that doesn't matter for, so this is not, the 72 does not include these, are Missouri State and Delaware because they're in their final year of reclassifying, and Akron had such bad academics that they are ineligible for a bowl even if they go 12-0.
Yeah. They didn't go 12-0.
They did not, no. They're 5-7 and done playing football for the year. I believe the MAC made them a bye week on the last week because they knew they couldn't go to a bowl, and the MAC has an odd number of teams this year with UMass.
Okay.
Yeah, so Akron is the one school done playing football.
Okay.
So 72 teams. There are 21 teams still in the hunt to get their 6th win and become eligible, not including Delaware, because Delaware cannot become eligible because they're reclassifying. Of those 21 teams, there are 3 sets of them playing each other this week. So effectively, if there's 3 games against each other, there are 3 bowl eligible teams right there. They have to be bowl eligible. So 72 plus 3 is 75. We have 75 bowl eligible teams. That leaves 18 left, but 3 of them are losers, so we know they're 5-7. So there are 15 teams that are looking for, let's see, 75, 7 spots. Okay. Right now, if you look at like ESPN's FPI predictor, we're predicting somewhere in the 81 to 82 range of bowl eligible teams. Army is number 11 in APR in terms of teams that can potentially finish with 5 wins. All this to say, Army is not going to make it as a 5-7 team this year. The likelihood of that is worse than the Giants losing all these fourth quarter games. And by the way, also in front of APR is Missouri State and Delaware. If they do get to 6 wins, Missouri State has already gotten there. So Army needs 6 wins. since Army Navy happens after the bowl selection Sunday, Army Navy won't count. So they need to win at UTSA. I am not sure what happens if there are not enough bowl eligible teams, and Army has a potential of getting their sixth win on Army Navy. My hunch is the bowls will not wait for them. But we'll see. Point is, if they want to go bowling this year, they got to win this weekend. All right, let's move on to UTSA. UTSA is now 6-5, 4-3 in the American. They've been very inconsistent, but they have been good at home. They beat Tulane 48-26, and they beat ECU 55-23 last weekend. They are much, much better in the Alamo Dome than they are on the road, and they have not lost a conference game at home since joining the American in 2019. I will be there this weekend. If anyone else is going, please reach out. I would love to see you guys. Dan, you want to take offense?
Yeah. In terms of what they're trying to accomplish, UTSA plays a lot like Tulsa, but way, way better. It's a lot of read option RPOs. I will say McCowan's not going to run the ball, but he's been really good this season, completing almost 68% of his passes, 25 touchdowns against just 6 interceptions, taking 14 sacks. Like, all of that is entirely respectable. He tends to be pretty accurate on short throws, doesn't necessarily hit those explosive downfield passes. He doesn't have to run because he has got a couple of outstanding running backs. Running back Robert Henry started off the year hot. Then more recently, we've seen Will Henderson III take over. These guys ran for 210 yards on 5.5 yards per carry against ECU, who has arguably the best rushing defense in the American, kind of by a lot. So, bottom line, Army's defenders need to tackle the running backs or they're dead. Like, they are dead meat, because this duo of running backs will run all over you. And once they get that run game going, McCowan, believe me, he can sling it. If he has to do it on his own and the running game's really not working, then their offense tends to struggle. But when that running game's working, I'm telling you, they'll put you in the ground. So that's a bad deal. Wide receivers Devin McEwen and David Amador II have 90-plus catches collectively for about 10 yards per catch. And wide receiver A.J. Wilson is a downfield threat. And they have 2 tight ends with 51 catches collectively and 4 touchdowns. So that's the whole deal. Like, there's really nothing that these guys don't do very well, with the exception that if you can get their running game stopped, they struggle on offense.
All right, as far as defense go, they have a decent rushing defense, 147 yards per game, although that is a lot a factor of who they have played. They are giving up over 4 yards a carry, and they've allowed 14 rushing touchdowns. So those two metrics are good signs. Leading tacklers are 3 linebackers and 2 safeties, but that's about what you'd expect. On defense, they have 21 sacks, 9 interceptions, and 10 forced fumbles with 7 recoveries. All in all, Army should match up pretty well against this defense. You should see a healthy dose of QB power, fullback power again, to a good amount of success. We'll see how Army tries to sling it. I think last time they were, I don't know, it was last time they were in the dome or 2 times ago was, I think it was last time. It was Bryson Daly, after having lost to ULM, just throwing the ball all around the field like it was nobody's business.
We saw a lot of crazy Drew Thatcher stuff in that game, and yes, it mostly worked, which was nuts.
Wild, yeah. So we'll see. This is, I believe, the 6th time Army's played in the Alamo Dome. They played Texas A&M there, they played Notre Dame there, and this is the 4th time they've played UTSA there. So probably one of the more frequent visitors to the Alamo Dome. So as far as special teams go, place kicker Michael Petra is perfect on PATs. He is 14-17 on field goals. He missed 130-plus and 140-plus. Punter Callie Hogan averaged 46.5 yards per punt last week, and he's put 2 he put two inside the 20 last week without a touchback. I feel like Army just has phenomenal punters every time they
Definitely the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Air Force, Temple, Tulsa, and now this guy. All right, takes on the game. Let's go to you, Dan.
Betting line opened at Army plus 6.5, has since risen to Army plus 7. I would honestly make it Army plus 10, and I Don't kill me. Like, Cons is going to yell at me, but I would still probably take UTSA to cover. I'm sorry. Really not necessarily expecting the Black Knights to be particularly competitive after what we saw last week. I mean, if they can run the ball and get that defense back on their heels, then obviously there's a lane for them to win the game. Like, they've beaten better teams than UTSA this season. That's not my argument. We're at the point of looking for some sophomores and some juniors to step up and put this team on their back. That's really not what you want from a service academy team. So I guess I'm lowering my expectations to try to protect my mental health, for better or worse.
All right. I'm going to just paint the picture of why I think this game could be more competitive than what the numbers might suggest. We've seen Army go back and forth with some of these games all year, right? Temple is one of the best games of the year in terms of execution, and we have a bad game of execution against Tulsa in a lot of ways. We see Tarleton State, you know, we're turning the ball over left and right, can't figure out, you know, what's going on. And then they beat a Big 12 team. So there's been a lot of back and forth all year. I wouldn't be surprised to see it for like the fifth time. On the other side, UTSA, it's a senior day. They're going to have festivities all week, families in town. They're already bowl eligible. They can't go to the conference championship. It's kind of a weird spot to be for UTSA. So prepping for the triple option after beating, you know, clearly prepping well and beating a good team in ECU.
Yeah, ECU is very good. They're really good.
Not an easy thing to do, and especially not an easy thing to do when the families are in town and it's senior day and there's all the festivities. And I guess my point is, I wouldn't be shocked if Army, you know, I think Dan's probably right in terms of the numbers and the stat lines, but if Army ends up winning this game, you're not going to find me sitting there with my jaw on the floor because Army found a way to get a run game going against a defense that is playing a triple option on their senior day.
So the one thing is, you know, nobody beats UTSA at home except Jeff Monken, who's done it twice.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is nuts. And once they did it with two freshman quarterbacks splitting time. So that was insane. Like, you could tell Jeff Monken was shocked by how well that game went. So. Is it possible? Yeah, it's totally possible. Yeah. It's hard to say that's the expectation come out of what we saw this past weekend.
All right, let's move on to fact or fiction.
Fact.
That is correct.
Or fiction.
Incorrect.
All right, last week I was not here. Dan said Army hits 5 yards per carry. That was fiction. It was way over in the first half, and then it fell apart, finished at 4.5. Dan and Rob said fact. Omar said fiction.
You know what sucks about that is that they were on pace to rush for 300 yards and win that game and have the Army-Navy game have the line on the Army-Navy game be a push, and they just couldn't finish.
Dan, it's flushed.
I know. Sorry, I'm staring at my poop in the toilet bowl right now.
Rob says Army forces 2 turnovers. That was a fact. Rob and Omar both said fact. Omar, God's Power and Lloyd Benson each get carries. That was fiction. God's Power took 5 for 11 yards. Benson had a 32-yard kick return but didn't get a carry. Rob and Omar said fact, and Dan said fiction. This week, Dan, you can go first.
Staying with the downer, Army rushes for under 200 yards this week. So we're going with negative.
I'm going to say fiction.
Yeah, I'm going to say fiction too. I guess I just can't get behind it. When I was writing this up this morning, I was a little bit in my feels, but yeah, no. Here's hoping they're going to get it together. Right? Let's believe that they do.
Yeah. My factor fiction is Army picks off McCown.
Oh, I'll take that. There's a decent chance that happens.
So he's thrown an average of an interception every other game, but he's yet to throw one at home this year. But I'm going to say fact as well. I like that.
Army's been very good at picking off McCown in particular.
That's true.
Like that defense has always been able to make him. I think
they had two last year, and they had one in the Alamo Dome, or one or two in the Alamo Dome a couple of years ago.
Seen him quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. Lastly, Firsty Club, Anthony Scott says Army tight end snags a touchdown. I'm going to hammer the fiction button as hard as I possibly can. I don't think they go back to the well on that, but That doesn't mean I don't hope it happens.
You know what? I'm gonna, screw it. You're right. That's a fiction. Unfortunately, I want it to be fact, but no.
Yeah. Former Tanker says Coleman plays ?
No way in hell.
I would bet a sizable amount. The only thing holding me back from betting a large amount of money is the risk of an injury to Helms. Like, all Coleman plays, whether or not Coleman plays, is purely a function of whether Helms gets injured. And I don't even want to answer that.
If they didn't play him on senior day at home when they needed a spark and Helms was struggling, you ain't going to see him on the road.
Or
really crazy stuff happens.
No,
sorry.
Cool. Let's go to the mailbag.
You've got mail.
All right. If you are a Firstie Club member, you get to ask your questions for the show to answer as part of our mailbag segment.
I should have saved the "Do we see Kelman at UTSA" as a mailbag question because he just asked it.
Yeah. Here we go. We can talk a little bit more about it. Not even to keep Helms healthy in the event the game becomes a blowout. If it's a blowout, if it's an Army blowout, maybe, but I doubt it. If it's a UTSA blowout, no chance.
Hey, I don't think so either. I think that this is your guy. This is, this is the last essentially regular season game of the year, and it's not so much that they need the win, but it's just Helms is going to be your quarterback next season. Why are you pulling him out?
The only thing I could possibly think of, like, I'd put it this way: if Army is blowing out UTSA, which, to be clear, I do not think is going to happen. But if that happens, I think there is a greater chance that you see God's power taking snaps than you do Coleman.
Interesting. That's interesting. I'm not under the impression God's power has been practicing at quarterback. Like, I fully believe that the reason that they put him in at fullback this week and just against this season has been to get him used to playing in front of 40,000 people and not freak out. Which, by the way, I'm not sure that they've accomplished yet, but he's definitely, I don't think he's ready. Not at all.
Sure. Although, if it's a blowout, give him some in-game reps.
I guess that's true.
All right.
David Graves has got one here. Do we think Bartosz or Generelli are coming back this season? I expect both guys to play against Navy. Would not surprise me if we saw Bartosz this week against UTSA.
Right. And service academies have always had a tradition is a weird word to use, but tradition of keeping guys out until service academy games because they want to keep them healthy if they're already injured. So it wouldn't be shocking if they didn't play this week and then were available for Army Navy.
Andy Scott says that kills my question about God's power being a viable B-back contender.
I think he is a viable B-back
contender. I think he is too. I disagree with that. I think he just hasn't sort of gotten it there yet.
So Dan and I were talking about this yesterday. I think there is a real chance that the staff thinks that because Helms is the quarterback next year, there's a chance that if God's power wants playing time consistently throughout his time, he's going to have to be a B back and fill this like Kanye Udo, like slash, Briggs Bartosz style. Player, this sort of faster fullback. There's a 231-pound freshman quarterback on the roster that you'd love to get time in the games if he can. Whether or not he's a viable quarterback contender over Godspower, I don't know. I'm not in those meetings, but to think about a 231-pound version of Bryson Daly makes me smile a little bit. So I wouldn't be shocked if they wanted him to be a B-back because they see Helms taking next year, and then you have this Blake Owen guy coming up, same class as God's Power, who's, I believe, 20 pounds heavier than God's Power. And that 20 pounds, you'd like to be able to throw around a little bit. So that wouldn't shock me either. I mean, I know nothing about this freshman quarterback, but again, I think with how this year went,
just in terms of the fullbacks right now, you've got Rendina coming back as a firstie next season, but he's a banger and he's more of a blocker. And they got Bartosz coming back. He'll be a cow. And they've got what's the one I'm forgetting? Help me out. He played this week.
Rendina, Carson Smith.
Carson Smith, thank you. And Carson Smith coming back, he's kind of a banger too. So they need a little bit more speed back there. And if God's power could figure that out, I think they'd be very, very happy to play him a little more.
I think Bartosz fits the Udo mold more than the Buchanan mold.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree with
that. But I think Smith and Rendina are your bangers and God's power is more of the Bartosz and Udo realm of things where you get a little bit more speed on him. But it'd be interesting to see for sure. I think they're going to do a lot of weird stuff against Navy like they did against Air Force. And I wouldn't be shocked to see God's power as part of that.
For sure. Last question, Anthony Scott, how much weight did they throw on Helms for next season? If it ain't 15 pounds, I'll be shocked.
I don't know. I mean, by the time they're juniors, they're pretty much capped out. Like you see, when you look at the roster from year to year, you obviously see a big jump from freshman to sophomore, see a decent jump sometimes from sophomore to junior. It's very rare to see a player jump more than 5 to 10 pounds. I mean, maybe a lineman or something.
10 pounds is kind of a lot for a quarterback.
Yeah. So, especially as a senior, like they've already been in the program for 3 years.
All right. Let's come back to that. That's an interesting question that I'd like to come back to this spring.
Yeah. All right.
I'm on the larger side of that. All right. Are we ready?
Dan, you have a favorite thing, right?
Yeah. So, we're at our reunion. One of the things that happens when you go to these big reunions is that the soup gets up there and talks about like what it's like to be a cadet and how the Corps has gotten better and not just how the Corps has. Right. And it's a sales pitch for the job that they're doing because the classes are how they get, you know, half the money to run that place. And they want to prove it to you. So then he opened it up to questions and I asked a question and I said, listen, when I was here, I was a reasonably successful athlete, but I also went to Europe twice with the history department, and I went to airborne school, you know, with the former comm. It was awesome. I got to do what I wanted to do in the pool, but I also got to do a lot of the West Point stuff too. And I asked, is that still possible? And bottom line, he gave several examples of how it is still possible. He said, you know, they're not pulling the offensive line off of, you know, out of the weight room to go to aerosol school. And they're not pulling Johnny Crush out of the pool when he's trying to qualify for NC2A championships. But they gave the example of Allison Riley, who is the team's leading scorer on the women's lacrosse team, who actually did Sandhurst last year also, as well as playing lacrosse. So it sort of depends on the individual and what they want and the sport and sort of how it works. But yeah, I thought that was cool. I thought it was amazing to hear that Allison Riley also did Sandhurst. And the Corps, I was very impressed by the stuff that the Corps is doing. It's a lot less.
You gave me a hilarious image of like a 310-pound Paolo Gennarelli.
Oh, coming out of a helicopter.
Aerosol. Well, no, just getting dealt with by the imported E7s from Fort Campbell. that'd be a funny TV episode or something. All right. Well, I think that's about it. Unless you got anything else, Dan?
No, that's it.
All right. Let's beat the Looney Tunes.
Beat them.
Thanks for listening to this week's Ask for Football Army Football Show. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Army football. Remember, whether you're cheering in the stands or following along from home, get all your updates on the Army football team at askforfootball.com. And as a special thanks, we would like to thank our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you need. Visit jocelynbradley.com for all your real estate needs. Don't forget, subscribe, leave us a review, and follow us on social media for all the latest updates. Until next time, go Army, beat Navy!